From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Kotsokwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com. According to research from the University of Western Cape School of Business and Finance, 70 to 80% of startups and small businesses in South Africa fail within the first 5 years. These figures are shocking and concerning, given that South Africa is a nation with 46.2% unemployment, a ticking time. Now, in this episode of iAfrican Bites, Heavy Chef founder Fred Rude joins us in a discussion on the role of the person, that is the entrepreneur who owns the business. The entrepreneur is a source of action in a business. He or she is the one making important decisions on products or services and ways of production. How do we cultivate a cavalry of battle-ready entrepreneurs? Fred Rude, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican.com, iAfrican Bites. Fred, I'm gonna drop a bombshell of the first question, right? Now, yesterday we woke up to stage 6 load shedding in South Africa, which means we don't have power for up to 9 hours a day. And, you know, some of the effects of power cuts is loss of internet signal, weak signal. On top of that, to make it worse, we have high fuel prices, interest rates are high. There's political tension. There's talks about the general elections next year. With all this melting in a melting pot, right? What do you say to an early stage entrepreneur, you know, who's either, you know, generating revenue, but not making profit, or is that a pre-revenue stage? What do you say to him, you know, with all this happening in South Africa?
I would say to him or her, our future relies on you, so don't mess it up. And P.S., no pressure. Yeah, dude, it's a great question, Batong. And I think, look, let's face it, Heavy Chef, and by the way, just for your listeners who are wondering why the name Heavy Chef, the name comes from the saying, never trust a skinny chef. So it's essentially, it relates to those of us in the kitchen, in the, you know, next to the fire, who are rolling up our sleeves, who are digging the trenches, who are learning by doing their 10,000 hours whilst, you know, they've jumped off a cliff and they're building an airplane on the way down, right? And these are the heroes, the superheroes who are eating their own food. And so the reason why we call it Heavy Chef is because, you know, we want to learn from people who are heavy chefs. And our core belief, going back to your question, is that entrepreneurs can change the world for the better. And they can do it faster and more efficiently than any other sector in society. So it's really, really important that we look after these superheroes. And it just feels like nobody's really taking the time to understand them, to inspire them, to empower them, to accelerate them, to give them the chances that they really need. Instead, what we have in this country is just so much red tape and so many regulatory requirements that it's becoming so onerous. So it's really important that, you know, we say to our entrepreneurs, we've got your back. And that's effectively what Heavy Chef is all about. It's about, here are some recipes to get you going. Here are the learning bites to inspire and empower you. And here is the community that you can join in order for you to succeed.
I love that. I love that. Say that again. Yeah. You said, well, there's a word that you used.
Well, in a world of talkers, it's the doers that are going to change it. And so it's time for us to start talking and it's time for us to start doing. And there's no better sector of society that can do better than entrepreneurs. You know, these are the ones like you and your partners, Batong, who are, you know, who sticking their necks out and taking a chance, who are being creative and who are willing to take the risks, because it's tough. It's tough being an entrepreneur. I'm sure many of the people who listen to this will know that it's really, really difficult, not just to start the business, but to scale it and to succeed. So at Heavy Chef, I mean, our cause, our purpose is really to inspire people to start businesses and then empower them to succeed.
On that note of toughness, and when you talk about my partner, so my partner I had this morning, Zalo, right? He's my partner and lead at iAfrican. We're a bit of a frustration, towards each other this morning, where certain work wasn't handed in on time, and frustration's built up, because you're under-resourced, in human capital or financially. How do you and your co-founders resolve conflict?
Well, I mean, our leadership, it's a very flat structure. So, in terms of our team, we've got Louis, we've got Lucanio, we've got Zinkler, we've got Zola, we've got Druja. We've got Randall, we've got a team of leaders, Mo and Bronwyn, people who effectively are all contributing to create this learning platform. And so, what we do have is a set of what we call ingredients, right? Those ingredients is it's essentially what makes up Heavy Chef, what makes Heavy Chef Heavy Chef, right? So we've codified that, and if anyone's interested, they can go and have a look at heavychef.com/ingredients, where we've listed them. There's 10 of them, right? So these ingredients essentially are the guiding principles that become our North Star. They're the things that we always refer back to. So when there is conflict, we know that there is a way of looking at life and at the world that we've agreed upon. So when you join the team, this is essentially the kind of blueprint that you use to go forward, right? So I mean, just for the audience's interest, I'll list them. I mean, so the first thing is inspire, then it's empower, then it's learn, do, share, and it's humble, ambitious, design, feelings, and facts, right? So just to go through those again. So the first two is inspire and empower. And I already mentioned that. So it's like our cause, right? Our purpose is to inspire people to start new businesses and then empower them to succeed, right? Our pedagogical triangle, the learning curriculum that we've created, is based upon this learning modality, which is effectively learn first, then apply it to your business, do, and then share the knowledge with your peers. And in sharing, you lock in the knowledge, because even in articulating, you're solving problems. You're taking the learnings, the data that you've gleaned from your actions, and being able to critically assess them and be able to then continue learning. And so that the wheel turns, or the triangle turns in this case, learn, do, share. Then it's about what we would call our values, right? So the values of Heavy Chef would be we are humble, but we are also ambitious, right? So we must never forget our humility, our humbleness in terms of who we are as a team of people. We are continually humble, but at the same time, and they're not mutually exclusive, we are really, really ambitious. We want to change the world, and why not? And we want to do it through the Heavy Chef platform. And most importantly, we want to do it by inspiring and empowering these amazing superheroes, because we know that that is truly scalable, right? Then it's about design. We want to design systems and solutions that solve the problems that are endemic in society at the moment, right? So design is really key. It's not just design thinking, but it's also the look and feel, the aesthetic, the visual language that we create for Heavy Chef, right? And then lastly, we have a saying, a maxim at Heavy Chef, which is basically the last two ingredients. Start with feelings, finish with facts, because both of those are important, right? Start with feelings, finish with facts. Now, we live in a very polarized world, right? So you need both of those to be able to navigate life. You need to be able to understand your feelings. You need to be able to tap into your feelings and really allow your gut brain, which has been developed over the last 200,000 years as a species, and millions of years before that, I guess, as a living being and a living line. We have this gut brain, which gives us signals and clues as to what's right and what's wrong. And we need to learn to listen to that gut brain. So we start with feelings. So even in our meetings, Baton, we always ask the first question we ask of each other around the table, we ask, how are you feeling? And we go around. It's one or two words. How are you feeling? And usually that elicits something that gives you a bit of a clue as to what's going on. And it gives you a little bit of a way of navigating how to speak to your fellow humans around the table, right? But then you finish with facts. And this is really important. The facts are very intentional. You need to be able to zoom out and look down at the puzzle pieces on the table and look at the data that you have been able to assess and to accumulate over time and be able to think critically about how you put those puzzle pieces back together again. So start with feelings, finish with facts. And I think just lastly on this point about conflict, once we've established those ingredients, and you know, anyone can really create their own ingredients for their own company, their own team. You know, what are the things that they value? What are the things that they hold dear in their lives? And always hold that as guiding principles. That's the yardstick that you measure things by, right? So if you're fighting with your business partner, but you're saying, hey, you know, our values are humble and ambitious. Are we being humble? You know, are we, you know, staying true to that humility? Or are we being proud? Are we being the opposite of humble? And so once you have those in place, it gives you some form of a, well, in our case, a recipe book to be able to follow, you know, and to be able to fall back upon. And it helps when it comes to issues when you're taking strain to have your values codified, to have them written down, and to be able to lean back upon them when things get a bit cloudy and a bit murky. Because then you have these principles that you've had from the start.
Start with feelings and end with facts. I like that. But Fred, I can also put it to you now to say that at the end of the day, this is business, right? And they are tasks, they're deliverables. Now, in this flat structure, how difficult is it to hold each other accountable and still have a healthy relationship amongst yourselves?
So I think the principle is there. By the way, Batong, it sounds like there's an itch that you're trying to scratch yourself.
No, not you.
Sounds like this is like a free therapy session for you.
Yes, it is. Zala, are you listening there behind?
So look, let me just be straight with you. You know, I've been in business for 2 decades now, and I've had the same business partners for that length of time. Mike is my brother, my friend, my warrior in arms, and you know, he's somebody that I trust implicitly. But we fight, you know, we flipping at each other's throats, and you know, like it's I think one of the key principles, and by the way, this applies in my view to relationships as well, is it's really important to learn to fight well, right? So when you fight, you got to fight well. And there's a whole bunch of principles around that, you know? So, I mean, first of all, you've got to stick to the point at hand, right? So keep the main thing the main thing. So whatever it is that you're aiming for, always hold that, again, going back to your values, but also your strategy. You know, what is it that what's your victory condition? What is the thing that you're trying to achieve? And then always hold that as the thing that you're working towards, right? So know what the point is, because otherwise it starts to devolve into all kinds of personal things, right? The second thing I would say with that is you know, when you learn to fight well, one of the critical mistakes that we all make, and believe me, I have a lifetime of lessons around this, is to label the person and not the behavior. You know, always label the behavior, right? In my view, if you start to label the person, it starts to devolve into a very nasty, bitter, and triggering argument, right? As opposed to a healthy and innovative discussion and discourse, you know, which is what you want. And a key trick there is to be able to label the behavior rather than the person. So if there is a behavior that's not wanted or a result that's not wanted, zero in on that, really identify what that problem is and label it. You know, it's in psychology terms, they call it naming the dragon, you know? So name the dragon, not the person, because otherwise you just start to, you know, throw it up, your fault. And then you point fingers, right? So it's that behavior that's really important. And then you have to have some form of contract, some sort of tacit agreement or an overt agreement that you won't take it personally. You know, one of the biggest challenges that that teams make is that they can't speak openly because they don't want to hurt other people's feelings. Screw that. You need to be able to say it, especially as a small business, especially as a startup, especially as a scale up, especially when you're growing and there's cash flow concerns and all that kind of crap. You can't wait 2 days to be able to call it. You have to be able to say something is wrong, right? And be able to say, listen, this is the problem that I have, and it's this behavior. And this was within your wheelhouse. This is your category, your domain. And let's face it, I need to help you, or you need help from me, or we need to talk about it. But whatever's going on, we need to find something. It's not personal. It's all about this thing that we need to name, right? The dragon needs naming. And so that's really, really crucial. And the other thing is there has to be in any, governable functioning team, there needs to be accountability, right? And and accountability is really about, I mean, at the first step to an accountable structure is trust, you know. So trust is all about understanding what everybody's roles are and allowing them to flourish in that role. You've decided that you're going to open lines of communication, then that does two things. Number one, it allows you to be able to call the behavior or the result when the result is not what you want, right? But number two, it also allows you to ask for help, right? To say, you know what, I'm struggling here. I'm not too proud to ask for assistance, right? So you put your hand up and you say that. And then it's about being accountable within that, right? So accountability, it's very important to understand this. Accountability is not saying, hey, it's my fault, right? That's part of it. But accountability, it's really important to understand that there's two elements to it. The first is the acknowledgement the identification and awareness and acknowledgement of what's going wrong, and to put up your hand and say, hey, this is my part to play in this. The second bit to accountability, true accountability, is to say, right, now that we've identified what the problem is and whose fault it is to say, this is how we're going to redeem it. And that redemption is often forgotten. It's very easy to get into a situation. It's like, hey, I'm so sorry, guys. It's my fault. Sure, that's fine. But what is going to happen now, right? How do we redeem the situation? And that's true accountability. Is say, I did wrong. This is what I'm doing about it. And then to fix it, to put a ribbon on it and to say, look, this is what I did. Because suddenly what happens is then you start to get the spiral of trust going upwards, right? And I think if people can agree to these principles, you're going to have a much easier ride in a very, very rocky road. Because really, I mean, it's as you know, Baton, I mean, you know, the stats are against us. You know, the University of Western Cape recently did a study in South Africa. Businesses are, 80% of businesses are likely to fail in the first 3 years, right? Some studies have it higher than that, right? Now you think about that. That's like putting I've said this before, but it's like having a gun with 100 chambers, right? And filling 80 of those chambers with bullets and then playing Russian roulette, you know? Like, it's insanity. You'd never do that. But that's effectively what we're doing with business. So it's really important that you put your pride away, that you look to your business partners and you say, look, you're my sister, you're my brother. We're in this together. And let's not get a bullet in the head. Let's flip and make this work. That means that whatever, you know, pride and, you know, whatever ego issues that you might have, you have to put that aside and you've got to learn to fight well.
No, definitely, Fred. I think that says mountains for me, you know, because, you know, quite recently we lost our founder and it's been a lot. It's been a lot in terms of just, you know, figure out the waters, but we're there. I think me and Zalo make a formidable team and we've sort of navigated the waters. But I want to tap into your 20 years experience. Now, before co-founding your digital agency, Worldwide Creatives, in 2003 with Mike and Lewis, you were a graphic designer. Now, how was the shift from being the technical guy who normally gets the brief from like the creative director to now the CEO of a digital agency who goes and pitches clients like Rand Merchant Bank? How was that shift?
So, yeah, that's a great question. And there's, I mean, several components to that question, or at least the answer to that question. And the first thing I'd like to say in responding is that in my view and my life and my perspective that I've always been an entrepreneur. So I've always been somebody who, you know, is a creative. And I mean, if you think about entrepreneurs, I mean, like, let's just take an artist, for example, an artist or a designer, right? An artist you would give that artist a canvas and you would say, okay, cool, here's a canvas, here's your tools, and paint from there. They then will create something beautiful with their tools and the canvas, right? An entrepreneur has to create this beautiful picture and use the tools at hand, but also has to create the canvas upon which that painting is painted, right? So it's this doubly creative thing. It's an idea that sits in your head. You have to somehow manifest that thing out of nothing, right? You have to make the money, you have to create, you have to find the initial money to be able to create the product to make more money. And it's this catch 22 that you're sitting in, right? And so it is possibly, in my view, the single most creative endeavor on earth. So for me, the leap from being a designer, which is, you know, I've always been a creative soul. I always, you know, was drawing and painting. I got into a lot of trouble at school because I was always drawing cartoons with my teachers and I got a few expulsion warnings at school. You know, I was always, I won the art prize at school. And, you know, there was always a lot of creativity in me, but I see design as visual way of solving problems. I mean, that's my definition of design, to put it that way. And I think that the second thing that comes up to me is that, you know, when I think about in entrepreneurship, I often refer to a really brilliant book, which, you know, any of your readers are interested, I would highly recommend The E-Myth Revisited by a guy called Michael Gerber in the United States. And in a nutshell, what the E-Myth is all about is it's the entrepreneurial myth. So it's essentially this idea of when you are a designer or let's say a pie maker or a, you know, burger maker, right? Or, you know, a chef in a kitchen or whatever, like, let's just say a pie maker. If you make pies and you're working in a company and the owner is telling you make more pies and I make more money, it gets to a point when the entrepreneur in you is going to say, well, hang on, I'm doing all the work and this person is making all the money. So why don't I go and make my own pies for my own business and I make all the money, right? So what happens is that person who's essentially a technician will go into their own business and they will start making pies, but they'll register a company and then they'll, you know, ostensibly make a lot more money, except they don't. And here's the problem. They don't make a lot more money because they are now exchanging one job as a pie maker for seven jobs as an entrepreneur, right? Because now all of a sudden, you are not just making pies. You're also the salesperson, the admin person, the HR person, the marketing person, the operations person, the logistics person, and just about everything else as well. So suddenly you have to split your time, whereas you're spending all your time making pies initially. Now suddenly you've got to do all these other things, right? So it's really blooming hard. And so there's a huge lesson in that. And from what I had to go through in my own career when I was a designer, I had to learn how to effectively split my time. And I would say lastly on this point, Baton, is the biggest lesson that I learned from that transition from designer to CEO was do what you're good at and delegate the rest. And the reason why I say that is because I had to learn the lesson in my old business at the digital agency when I was doing the admin and the finances and the HR and all that kind of stuff, as well as doing the design and the creative output, right? I mean, we had a team of three people and we were doing so much work. And obviously this was before it grew to 100 people, but you know, in that transition, what happened was I started doing a lot of things poorly. And I had to learn how to do one or two things well and delegate the rest to people who were really much better at me than those other things. So do what you're good at and delegate the rest.
That's powerful, especially for businesses that are scaling, businesses that are now growing into bigger. I say from the, what do you call this thing? From the pond to the ocean. You know, I think that's very critical. That's very critical. Now, Fred, you ran Worldwide Creatives along with your co-founders till 2016. They bought you guys out, or you sold the company. I mean, you'll clarify that. Take us through the journey of when does Heavy Shift come into the picture? What are the lessons you took from that deal, or, you know, selling the company to now Heavy Shift, essentially a learning platform for entrepreneurs?
I'm glad you asked that question. I mean, there was a lot of lessons and learnings in that. So we grew to, we had, I think we had 65 permanent employees, and then we had about another 30, 40 contracted people who made up the bulk of our team. So we were sitting at about 110, 120 people in total at the digital agency. Our clients were, F&B, RMB, Vodafone, Mixt Telematics. We had Foschini Group across the board, Hyundai, Virgin Mobile. We had just a really amazing roster of clients. And it got to the point where, we were starting to field a lot of offers that, from bigger corporations that wanted to buy us in 2013, 2012, 2013. And eventually, we had a bunch of meetings, and one of the organizations was a software company called Saratoga Software. And we really, really liked the individuals that ran the business, and we decided, you know what, this is something that we feel we could do as a partnership with these individuals. And they were going to help us build some of the tools that we wanted to build and to take us in the direction that we were going to go. And so, look, we sold the company. I ran it till 2016, and I would say it was a wonderful experience, particularly because the people that bought us were really an amazing, heartfelt, very honorable group of individuals, and they just had an amazing team. The problem was is that I'm a starter. So I'm somebody who likes to start and scale. Once it gets to a certain level and a size, then my brain starts to fritz a little bit, particularly when we start getting into the heavy lifting, the detail-oriented side of, board meetings and spreadsheets, risk mitigation and growth. All of these things where you're managing every last little line item on a spreadsheet. And frankly, as you pointed out, I started out as a designer. So my business partner, Mike, was much better at that than me. And so after 3 years, I decided to leave. I needed a break. I had been in the advertising industry for 13 years. I just wanted to take some form of a self-introspective break, which would allow me to decide upon the next steps. And what had happened was, in the agency world, we had already come up with the concept of heavy shift. And just a quick origin story with that is that in the early days when we didn't have, and I mean, I don't know if any of your audience members have ever run a digital agency before, but it's flipping hard. And the thing about any kind of service business is that you're only as big as your last client, right? So, you have to have a few blue chip companies or some sort of brands on your portfolio of clients, in order for you to grow. Because otherwise they go like, what the hell, man? You freaking small fry. And so we were doing rats and mice up until about 2005. And so I was the salesperson, so I went out and knocking on doors and whatnot, and I was just having no luck. And we're selling digital marketing services, right? So this is early days, 2005. I mean, we were the OGs of like all of these, digital channels and whatnot. And so across the road from our studio was the Ferrari garage. So I thought, what bigger brand in the world is there than Ferrari? Even though they were a small client, there was a big freaking brand. So, I went across, knocked on the door, and this guy called Reinhardt, he answered the door. He said, "Look, you got 20 minutes, give me your pitch." And I pitched him hard. I just told him all the stuff that was amazing about digital marketing. And he, after 20 minutes, he looked at me and he said, "You know what, Fred? I never trust a skinny chef." And it was the first time that I'd ever heard that saying before. I was like, "What? What the hell do you mean by that?" And he said, "Well, listen, whilst you're talking and selling me all this stuff, social media and mail, marketing mailers and new websites and whatnot, and I looked you guys up, you've got a crap website, you don't do any social media, and you're not doing any of the things. So, like, you're a skinny chef, why should I trust you?" So I was like, "Well, damn, okay, yeah, damn, Daniel." And so I said to the guy, "Well, screw you, bro, I'm gonna flip and show you." So I went back to my business partner, Mike, and we had a discussion about it. We were like, how do we become heavy chefs? You know, and it just organically entered into our conversation. And so between the two of us, we rebuilt our website. We started a blog. We started email marketing. You know, we did a whole bunch of things for ourselves. I went back to Reinhardt about 7 months later and showed him all the stuff that we had done. And he promptly gave us the account. So we got Ferrari in the end. We got the account. And that was the first domino out of many clients. So after that came the DA, then we got the City of Cape Town. And then we, you know, we got the Hyundai account, and we got a whole bunch of like major accounts, you know, Fashini Group and so on. And so we started making, you know, good money after that. But that was the first one to fold. So the lesson of Heavy Chef was ingrained right from the start. So anyway, I thought, well, you know, and we had used that as part of our values and, you know, as part of our DNA. And I took the concept from the digital age because, you know, they weren't interested in Heavy Chef, so, or the people that bought it, the agency. So we took the name, I rebranded it, and then registered Heavy Chef as a company for entrepreneurs. And the whole concept is that we want to break down entrepreneur learning into bite-sized chunks to make it easy and accessible for entrepreneurs to learn the skills from other entrepreneurs on how to be better entrepreneurs. That's effectively what Heavy Chef is in a nutshell. So if you go to heavychef.com, you can sign up. You can either sign up for 250 Rand, or you can go to our Heavy Chef Foundation, which is heavychef.org, and you can apply for free membership, right? So if you feel that you can't afford 250 Rand per month, for whatever reason, we've set up the foundation so that anybody who feels that they can't or don't want to pay the 250 Rand can get the full suite of services for free through the foundation. And then hopefully we do a good enough job that you feel guilted into into paying us down the line. But the whole point is that 10% of whatever those people that do pay, it goes towards those that don't or can't. So essentially, it's a curriculum based on three pillars: tech, leadership, and creativity. Those are the three pillars that we feel are the most important for entrepreneurs of the future to learn, right? So you get access to over 3,000 learning videos. Those are the learning bites that we have created, and they are basically covering all the various salient aspects of what it means to be an entrepreneur, right? So if you go into Heavy Chef and you sign up, you can also try for free 30 days before you start paying. And pretty much everything that you need to know about business is on there. So from business planning to business scaling to entrepreneurial mindset, finance and accounting, operations, management, legal, marketing, sales, technology, partnerships, networking, innovation and more. We've got all of that. And here's the clincher, is that it's not just anybody that's teaching. It's not just, you know, professors at university. We've got people who have been in the trenches, the heavy chef, the ones who are sitting in the kitchen and who are making the recipes themselves. And that's, you know, from, for example, Jonathan Smith, who started Payfast, to Letu Shabangu, who started Ukamba Beer Works, you know. DJ Spoo, who many of your listeners will know, you know, Sposiso Leope, who's just got an unbelievable presence. And, you know, the founders of Zero, Colin Timmis, Miles Kubeka, who started Boyo's Restaurant, Craig Rodney, who, you know, has a recipe on Instagram marketing, Brian Abana, Zolani Mahola, and so on and so on. We've got some of the biggest superheroes in sport, in business, in leadership, in management, all teaching how to do the various salient topics within business that entrepreneurs need to know.
Amazing. Jonathan Smith, I know him from varsity. So we used to have, way back in the day, like at UFS, we used to have an accelerator, the student accelerator. I think he was one of the managers, the main guys down there. And then when I got there, the subsequent year, he then left to go to Cape Town. It's amazing how then he became Jonathan Smith, Payfast, and. It's actually really interesting. I like when you say the ones in the kitchen. And it's very important because we tend to theorize entrepreneurship a little bit too much. And it's always good to have the ones that are actually in the kitchen. Talking about being in the kitchen, what are, you can share a story or two about your favorite, one of your favorite entrepreneurs or graduates that came out of, you know, Heavy Chef, from your 1,000+ entrepreneurs who've been part of the Heavy Chef community, you know, maybe about how they're solving a particular problem in Africa or in their community. Yeah, it would be good to get one of those stories.
Sure. I mean, to be frank, there are so many. I really like the story of, I don't know if you've come across Ollie Health, which is they are a mental health service for essentially anybody who feels like they need counseling, therapy, and they would like to resolve some of their challenges, but you know, want to do it online. So you can buy mental health credits. And so a guy called Mark Gregory Knowles, he created Ollie Health based upon his own story effectively. And he's very public about it. He's just an amazingly inspiring individual. As a youngster, he went to go study law at Stellenbosch. And he only lasted a week because he was found it so boring. So he got into philosophy and he didn't tell his parents. So he actually just hung out in the philosophy class. He continued to switch and he didn't tell his parents for a whole year. And so, I mean, he just did philosophy and then, you know, what else can you do in Stellenbosch but party, right? And so what he realized was because the people were partying so hard was that they needed a lot of booze. And so he set up a booze company, a booze delivery company, it became the first 24-hour licensed delivery service in South Africa. And at the age of 21, I mean, he was making a ton of money and, you know, he created a successful business and eventually sold it, right? And he, this is from a guy who's a dropout at university. And so he had a modicum of success at an early age. He went to North America and he actually had a mental crisis, a real breakdown whereby, you know, he was struggling with meaning and purpose and really trying to identify where his journey was in life. And so, you know, he started going about resolving his own mental health challenges. And in doing so, he saw a need for this service, which essentially is the ability to buy credits and wherever you are in the world to be able to find a counselor, a therapist, somebody who's qualified to be able to talk to you about your problems and challenges and to be able to talk you through it. So you buy credits, it's really cost effective and it's just incredibly efficient. And so that's growing like gangbusters around the world. And this is just, you know, it's one of the many, many youngsters that we have. I mean, there's another story which I'll share with you very quickly. In KZN, I was doing one of my road trips around South Africa where I go and visit entrepreneurs all over the country and I get their stories and I try to understand what the problems that entrepreneurs are facing. And so I got a notice from a friend of mine, a guy called Pastor Tom Basson, who happens to be the pastor at a church in Belito called Grace Church, really incredible church, a really incredible community. And he said, dude, there's a person that I want you to meet and her name is Nonklankla Joy. And so I went down, I drove to KZN and I went to the Grace Church building and this lady came in. I mean, she must have been in her 50s, you know, very nondescript. She walked up to me and I said to her, Nonklankla, it's a real pleasure to meet you. And I briefly skimmed over her document that my colleague Zhuzha had printed out for me. But I didn't pay much attention because I was in a hurry. You know, I was going to capture this recipe. We're going to do the interview and then I was going to move on. And she looks at me, she goes, no, you mustn't call me Nonklankla. You must call me Ma Joy. You young people, you're so disrespectful. I mean, she's only a few. No, I know. And she just schooled me. And I was like, my humble apologies. I'm really sorry, my joy. It's a real honor to meet you. And so she proceeded to tell me the story about her life. And it's a really harrowing story. But in brief, she was diagnosed and given a terrible prognosis in 2014 of cancer, right? She had a very serious progressive cancer. Her she had kids, and the only thing she knew how to do was, you know, that she really knew how to provide for a family was to farm, and she was a very good farmer. So she started planting in a small holding. She had lost a job, and so she had essentially figured out a way of just, you know, within a little plot to plant some crops that she could, you know, her and her family could eat. And what happened was the chickens kept on eating the seeds, which is actually quite a common problem. And so she saw these plastic trucks driving past. And one of the things that she realized was she could, from found materials, repurpose the plastics to raise and elevate the seeds and the soil from the ground. And she designed her own irrigation system for this thing. So she basically created a kit for farming. And so the people within her community at the church, they helped her to patent the design. And to cut a long story short, she's now employing about 30 people. She has beaten the cancer. And in, I think it was 2019 or 2020, she won the World Entrepreneur of the Year Award in Paris, in France. At the Impact 2 Awards, and she was nominated and given the award by none other than the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Muhammad Yunus from Bangladesh, who is her hero. And she's on stage getting this award from her. Now, how is it that, you know, we don't know these stories? They sit within our culture, within our population of 60 million people. You know, we've got one of the most diverse communities in the world. And we should be telling my joy story from, you know, from the hilltops. And, you know, and by telling, I have hundreds more stories. But anyway, if you want to hear those stories, go to heavychef.com and sign up.
Definitely. Definitely. It's amazing. I think what I'm pulling just from that, it's amazing how, I love when you say how she beat the cancer. It's funny how, like, and amazing at the same time, how when you find your purpose, your health, you know, becomes better, your breathing becomes better, that the way you walk, like, you just start glowing. And it's all about just finding purpose, really finding what you're good at. And it's a blessing. It really is.
I love that. And I think it's so true. It speaks to the principle of Ikigai. And for any of your listeners who are interested, I'd encourage them to look up Ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I, which essentially, in a nutshell, is a process. It's a Japanese process of finding your purpose, right? So it means that you have to answer four questions. Number one, what are you good at? Number two, what do you love doing? Number three, what can make you money? And number four, what can change the world just a little bit, right? And you write down in the answers in, and there's, you know, there's lots of answers to those questions, right? But you write them in those four circles, and where the intersection lies, that's your Ikigai, your purpose.
That's your Ikigai. Beautiful. Fred, wow. We've already such an awesome conversation. Fred, Glenn Gary Capital, a fund that invests in education. Tell us about your involvement. What do you guys do there? Why was it set up?
So, I mean, the idea behind Glenn Gary, and I mean, I'll share it with you. We don't share this a lot, but I'll share it with you just because I feel like I'm in the mood. But So Glenn Gary is actually from a very old movie that was kind of before my time, but it's called Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross. And there's a scene in that movie, if anyone wants to Google it, with Alec Baldwin, and he starts talking about sales. It's a 6-minute scene, and it is probably one of the best masterclasses on sales that you'll ever listen to. Just a pre-warning that it carries a lot of swearing and it is super funny, but it's pretty hard hitting. And so it gets straight to the friggin' point. And so we wanted to create an organization that was straight to the point, that got to the bottom line. It made things super clear. So the organization was essentially created in order for Louis, Mike, and myself to be able to invest in companies that we believed in, that did the world a favor, that did, it had some form of positive social impact, right? And it was also just a way of us, I guess, being able to use some of the money that we had made from the sale of the digital agency. So at the moment, the only investments that we've made are, we bought a building that was pre-COVID. It was probably not the best investment that we could have made. And Then we've invested in Heavy Shed. We've also invested in another company called Grey Feather Consulting, which is essentially a change management organization. But yeah, so the idea with that is to build up a pool of capital to be able to change the world for the better by investing in social impact businesses. But then also getting straight to the point in terms of the legendary principles.
Fred, you know, there's so much to talk with you about. Like, so you're an author of a book, right? What's the name of the book? I don't want to say it. I want you to introduce it.
For sure.
Bestseller on Amazon. Tell us about the book. Where can we find it? What is it about? What inspired you writing this book?
Sure. So, I mean, basically, the book is called The Heavy Shift Guide to Starting a Business in South Africa. And so it was a book that was inspired by the thousands of community members within the Heavy Chef larger community, and that they wanted something simple and practical to be able to guide them along the way of starting their business, right? Now, the opportunity, the inspiration for the book was very much around the principle that, there were so many people who were willing to give up their time to Heavy Chef that we would need to start compiling all these lessons into something that was, curated and accessible. So, and interestingly, we got, when I started talking about the book, we got a bunch of offers to publish it by some of the big distributors. But we decided, we already have our own audience. We have the events that we run. And by the way, that's an important point for anybody who joins Heavy Chef, is that you get free tickets to all of our events, which are usually 250 Rand per seat. But, you get two tickets at the very least to our events every month. So, we then started to distribute the books through our events. If you bought a ticket, you get a book. And then we also started to distribute the book through the assistance of our partner Xero, which is Xero. We started distributing them to disconnected entrepreneurs in disconnected areas, previously disadvantaged areas, disenfranchised areas, areas that are outside the grid that don't potentially have the opportunities of the kind of more connected suburbs around South Africa. So the idea is effectively just to create 10 chapters, really easy to learn stuff. And you can go to heavychef.org/books to be able to pick up a copy. Or you can come to an event and we'll give you one for free.
Lastly, just like me, you're a podcast host.
Yes, yeah. The Healthy Business Show.
The Healthy Business Show.
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Sure. So that was also, with Xero and PayFast and some.
And why am I not there yet? Why is Africa,
Africa
not
next,
there
baby. You're
get
next.
Our invite.
No. Your invite is in the post. No, for reals. We are going to get you on our show at some point. But I tell you what, Batong, the idea for that was, we've been doing these events together with Xero and PayFast and our other partners, Ex Nilo and Whipping the Cat and Workshop 17 and so on, for some time. And then Discovery approached us out of the blue. They just said to us, we love what you're doing. Can we collaborate on a podcast with you? And so they actually pitched the idea to me of the Healthy Business Show, which, I thought, flip, what a great idea for a show. And they asked me to be the podcast host. So we then started running a series of events together with Discovery for a single year. And then we created, I think it was about 30 episodes of the Healthy Business Show. And this was before COVID, during COVID as well in the first year. So 2019 to about 2021. And we just had a great time with it. We interviewed some of South Africa's top leaders. I chatted with Adrian Gore, with Barry Swartzberg, with Robbie Brosen, the founder of Nando's, and just a whole host of superstars in business. And the idea was really just to make it, again, super practical, fun, accessible, light and breezy. Good, solid, nourishing tips for how to run, how to scale, how to sell, and I suppose how to connect with your own purpose within business. And yeah, so we did stop recording in 2020, and I think the last one was aired in 2021. It was the number one podcast, business podcast in the country for a period. So I'm a huge fan of the podcast medium. So without a doubt, we will be reprising our podcast at some point. And I will most certainly invite you to be on there when we get it back up online.
Look, Fred, there's something very special that you said, celebrating business, creating superstars out of business, icons, business people, whether it's, you know, people at the upper echelons or startups just starting out. And I think in South Africa, that's exactly what we need. We have too many wrong heroes and wrong role models. When you open the news, it's just load shedding, it's just corruption. And we hardly seldomly really celebrate business people. And I think what Heavy Chef is doing, what the Healthy Business Show, a Healthy Business Entrepreneurship Show is doing, the next level, now it's a challenge for you, and we'll see how we collaborate as a documentary or a movie even about just, you know, the successful businesses out there. You know, why is there no documentary about the founding of Nando's and all these beautiful other companies in South Africa? Just so people can like be like, oh, okay, this is how Nando's was started, or Chicken Licken.
Or Monster energy drinks, or, you know, so many businesses have been started by South Africans and are doing such great things around the world, you know? So, I mean, Payfast and, I mean, Ex Nihilo, these are amazing companies, you know? So I 100% agree with you, Baton.
Fred, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican Bites. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bites. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican. On LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mohapi Show, Tech Legal Matters, and The Lead Creator, on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iafrican.com. That is iafrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bites is an iAfrican Media original show, produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.